hardly any of our friends are in a serious relationship. Most people have, you know, steady hookups, but they would never consider them their boyfriend or their girlfriend.
Most guys love to go looking out for the hookup. I think it's a lot better than having a relationship, personally, because there's more excitement. I mean, you don't really have the monotony of just going out to dinner with the same girl or just hanging out with her every single night.
I think that it's more about, you know, just meeting random people and having fun.
For me, personally, I try not to get too attached at all.
Those are some college students from a PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly story on the so-called hookup culture. It's not just college students, it's high school students too, and since kids are starting things earlier and earlier nowadays, it probably is finding its way into junior high. Dating, no longer a possibility. Even the term relationship is now pitted against the hookup. So what became of dating, courting, relationships, going steady, going out? And why has all of it slowly but surely been replaced with the so-called hookup, the, in some cases, anonymous sexual experience? Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse joins us for the next 10 minutes of the program. She's a regular guest, founder of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason University. She's author of the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
What happened to even something as simple as a relationship? Why has this generation abandoned the things that used to be considered kind of part and parcel of young people dating, going out, going steady, and having a relationship?
Well, honestly, Todd, I think that the adults have pushed them away from it. I mean, the adults have told us, I've told college students that you don't need to have a relationship in order to have sex. You don't need, heaven forbid, you don't need to get married to have sex. You can just have sex as a recreational activity. It doesn't have any particular significance. And then at the same time, they're telling young women in particular, you know, look, your career is far more important than your prospective, finding a prospective spouse. And so I've heard girls say things like, you know, yeah, I just hook up because I don't have time to be in a relationship. I'm all focused on my work and on my studies, and that's where my attention is. So what that means is that the adult culture has told young people that their priority ought to be in preparing for a career and furthering their education, and that having a relationship, well, that's just kind of a side thing thrown in if you happen to like that kind of thing. But it's not important. It's not serious. And therefore, the young people are treating one another in the way you're hearing those kids describe. The person is more or less disposable. They're just there for a few minutes of amusement, and then you can get rid of them when you're done with them and go back to the serious business, which the serious business, of course, is getting a job.
Is this, we've talked about this many times before, but is this, as the PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly report seemed to indicate, at least some of the opinions in there, is this the logical extension of sex as amusement or entertainment?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. This is sex as a consumer good. Okay, Todd, I often say that that what we've created is a culture of Walmart sex. That is to say, a lot of people don't like Walmart because they think it's impersonal, dehumanizing, doesn't take account of the big picture. Well, what we've done here is we've told young people that what we really want is mass quantities of low cost sex, without ever thinking about the long-range consequences of what you're doing. That's what has been promoted to young people, is that sex is a consumer good. And so the problem with that is that if sex is a recreational activity, then that makes your sex partner a consumer good. And we know what we do with consumer goods when we're tired of them. Well, we just get rid of them. And we certainly don't, you know, get attached to them or call them by their first name or anything like that, you know. So I think that's what you're seeing here with these young kids. Now I took a look at that report as well that you just took those clips from. And down in the bottom of that report, one of the authors that they interview mentioned that they get letters from students saying, you know, we're kind of tired of it, and gosh, it'd be kind of nice to have some romance. And even the boys are writing in saying, you know, it'd be nice to actually, you know, be connected with somebody once in a while, you know. So there's something profoundly inhuman about what we have promoted here among the young. And while they enjoy it in the short term, over time, they come to realize that there's something missing, and you don't want to live like that for your whole lifetime. Sooner or later, you want to actually have a real, honest-to-goodness relationship with somebody where the other person matters to you and you matter to them. You know, no one really likes to be on the receiving end of being used. And so the thrill wears off eventually.
What I'm wondering about is long-term consequences, because I think a lot of these kids are saying, yeah, this really is just the way it is for now, because sooner or later, after everything's in place, I will want to find someone and at least, you know, on a semi-permanent basis, set up a relationship, maybe have some kids and build a life together. But I'm wondering, is that being put in jeopardy if what is prevailing today in that person's life is the hookup?
Yeah, well, yes, that's exactly right, Todd. But people don't seem to realize is that if you're hooking up night after night and weekend after weekend and having 10, 15, 20 years of hooking up with contraception, and then you get married, when you get married, you want each and every act to be deeply meaningful, right? And you want it to be fruitful. You want to like to be able to have babies then, you know? And then you come to find out it's not so simple. You may have thrown away your years of peak fertility during all of that contracepting, and you have practiced holding back on your partner. You've practiced fantasizing while you're having sex rather than actually being there and being connected with the person. You've practiced numbing yourself almost. And so then when you are in a relationship and you want it to be deeply meaningful, you expect to throw a switch and it's all going to be different, you know? Well, it isn't all different, right? And so those people then have something they have to overcome and learn and redo in the habits of their heart and the habits of their behavior. And it's not as easy as it may seem. And I think this is one reason why people are become dissatisfied or disenchanted with marriage. They've got this, you know, great image of what it's going to be like, but they've been steadily practicing all the wrong things that are sabotaging their efforts then to have a good married life later when they finally decide that they're ready to do it.
Jen, I'm sure you'll be discussing hooking up at a student conference at the University of San Diego in early August called It Takes a Family to Raise a Village. Tell us quickly about this conference.
Oh, we sure are going to be discussing it. Yes, we call this conference It Takes a Family to Raise a Village. It's for college students and young adults, and the purpose of the conference is really to help the students create an intellectual and social climate on their campuses that's favorable to marriage. And so, yes, we're going to have a whole workshop on the subject of how you stay chaste in college, or how you can have a good time and have an enjoyable social life without participating in the craziness of the hookup culture. So students can learn about this conference by going to our website, ruthinstitute.org. The very front page of ruthinstitute.org gives you a place where you can apply for the conference. The conference is completely free to students who are selected for the program. It'll be pretty competitive, but we're looking for students of any discipline, and we're looking for students of any faith tradition. It's not some kind of exclusively Lutheran deal or some kind of exclusively Catholic deal. You know, the Ruth Institute is an interfaith effort to promote marriage to college students. So we're looking for young people all across the religious traditions, and most of the information will be academic, but there will be some workshop material that will be very practical information on how you can create a pro-marriage culture on your campus that actually is constructive towards building your future married life rather than doing all this crazy, destructive, and dumb stuff that's going on.
Folks, we'll post information on It Takes a Family to Raise a Village at our website, issuesetc.org. Go to the on-demand page. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jen, thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Now, when we come back from this break, the last half hour of the program is devoted to your questions and your comments, but in particular to your answer to this question. Leonard Pitts, nationally syndicated columnist, wrote over the weekend, "Why this tolerance among Christians for torture?" Under the heading Morality, he says, "In our smug belief that God is on our side, we often fail to ask if we are on his." He cites research that says the more you attend church, the more likely you are to condone torture. White evangelical Protestants, far and away, the most likely by 62% to support inflicting pain as a tool of interrogation. Do you support torture? Do you have qualms about it? Are you among those who say, you know, I'm a Christian in every other respect. I believe that we are to do unto others as we would have them do unto ourselves, but torture is the exception. Or maybe you're completely against it. Do you think that Christians tolerate torture? And how do you explain the fact that when polled, they tend to tolerate torture more than the average person? 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Do you believe in torture? Think about it. Give me a call during this break. It's open lines on the other side. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943, or talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. You know, I think the name says everything. Hook up. What does that mean? It just means an occasional, temporary, little attachment that really isn't an attachment. It is a detachment. And if sex is supposed to be anything, if it's supposed to be anything between two people, isn't it supposed to be some kind of an attachment? Can you even call it sex anymore, although the act remains the same, when all it is to you is hooking up? You hook, you unhook, you go your way. The problem with sex is, of course, it's a little bit like Velcro. It's not that easy to unhook once one has hooked. And it creates a relationship in spite of our best efforts to remain detached from one another. This is why God designed it to go inside marriage, the ultimate attachment, at least between men and women. When we come back, we'll talk about torture and whether or not you tolerate it. It's Open Lines right after this. I'm Todd Wilkin.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.